everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, all right, guys, finally here, finally doing the episode and all that. Again, I would like to deeply apologize to those of you that has been waiting for this episode. I'm not going to bother using the same old excuses. You guys have heard them 1,000 times at this point, but it was confirmed today that this was the final Saturday that I will be working until the big project that I talked about in my my delayed episode and all of that. But that's not going to be until like January, February, possibly even like March or something like that. So that's going to be a while away. And for those of you that have no idea what I'm talking about with the delay episode, early this morning, because I woke up very early, I posted just a little 3-minute episode just talking about that the Sea Beast was going to be delayed and that I would get to it this evening. And now here I am doing it this evening. So I'm going to go on ahead and say, and I know I've talked about this more than once and all of that, that I really, really, really enjoy this movie. I really, really enjoy it. I can't remember which one of my listeners, and I suppose I should have looked into my messages to see who it was that actually recommended this film to me. But yeah, like, whenever it was brought to my attention, I had never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. And yeah, got on Netflix like the next day or something and watched it. And I was completely like mesmerized by it while watching it and enjoyed it like there was no tomorrow. I think I've told you guys the story that while I was watching it, my lovely lady Emily was out and about, and unbeknownst to me, she was making plans with her sister, my soon-to-be sister-in-law, to babysit the children. She has 3 kids, 2 girls, 1 boy, the nieces and nephew. And right when the movie ended, like the end credits was still rolling, she opened up the door and I was like, hey, Emily, how's it going? You know, and then I see the kids behind her and I'm like, what are they doing here? You know, and like, oh, well, you know, they had to do this or do that. So they just wanted us to watch them for about 3 hours or something like that. And so I said, okay, do you have anything in particular you're wanting them to do? And she's like, oh, just do something to occupy them for a little while. And so I said, okay. Have any of you ever seen or heard of the movie The Sea Beast? And they were like, no. So I was like, well, I've got a cartoon for you to watch. And, you know, turned it on, and they were mesmerized by it from the start. And they watched it and everything. And it was a few days later after they had left. It was a few days later that, you know, we go over there. Her sister's name is Karen. And we go over there. And she just looked at me and very sarcastically was like, I would like to thank you for introducing them to the Sea Beast, because they have not been able to stop watching it, like, since you showed it to them. And I kind of shrugged my shoulders and I was like, well, there are plenty of more annoying films / cartoons / whatever that they could be watching. And so I'm like, it's cool that they're watching this one and all of that. I would have been ecstatic to have been able to watch something like this whenever I was a kid, because whenever I was a little kid, like, I was deeply like fascinated with pirates and sailing and stuff like that. And since I've, you know, I've liked movie monsters and things like that my entire life, I was a big fan of sea monsters, which I've always believed that sea monsters kind of walk the very thin line of if they're just their own thing, or if I loop them into like being kaiju and all of that kind of stuff, because I don't know. It's just like, you know, going my whole, there are very well-known sea monsters and all of that kind of stuff. And yes, by definition, they could and would be considered kaiju, but I've always just kind of viewed them as their own separate entity, because it's, they exist in their own little world, just out in the ocean and all of that kind of stuff. I would say lake monsters would be in that category as well. But yeah, I would have loved this as a kid. I believe I've told you guys about Moby Dick. Moby Dick is my all-time favorite book. It's one of those books to where I own multiple copies of it just because of different editions and things like that. And yeah, so I'm a big fan of Moby Dick. The first time I ever got to see anything concerning Moby Dick was in a hotel room. Big surprise there. And it was, I can't remember like at what point it was in the film, but I know I was able to catch like the end of it. And it was the version with Gregory Peck as Captain Ahab, which to this day, he is my favorite portrayal as Captain Ahab. And I just became obsessed with Moby Dick. I became obsessed with whales. To this day, the sperm whale, which is what Moby Dick was, is my favorite type of whale. Like, I've delved into the true story inspirations that inspired Herman Melville to write Moby Dick, which was combined with his own experiences on a whaling ship, as well as the tragedy of the Essex, which was a ship that was rammed and sunk by a sperm whale way back in the day, obviously. But they made a movie about it. It's called In the Heart of the Sea, and it stars Chris Hemsworth. It's a very good movie, very underrated movie. I highly recommend going to watch it. I saw it in theaters. But yeah, ever since then, I've pretty much been fascinated more with like these guys venturing out into the unknown, the unconquerable seas and oceans and all of that kind of stuff, and encountering these great beasts and sea monsters and all of that kind of stuff. And like, yeah, I mean, you know, I love Jaws. You guys know that. It's one of my favorite movies, and a lot of it is because it deals with a shark and it takes place on the water. And, you know, there's a good deal of kaiju films that feature sea monsters and all of that stuff. Like, Moby Dick was one of the things that really pushed me to enjoying this type of genre and all of that. Not just your standard kaiju like King Kong or movie monsters and stuff like that, but, you know, just a whole nother world of different types of sea monsters and things like that. And this is just a beautiful film. I'm doing that thing where I've got it playing while I'm talking, and it's muted. And they're doing the scene right now where they're on the back of Red, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about Red later on, but they're on the back of Red, and they're trying to, she's helping them catch fish and all of that stuff. So, and just seeing the way the animation is, the way that the water looks and all of that kind of stuff, it's a fantastic film. Like, I'm a big fan. So, but I've been thinking about going on ahead and doing an episode on Moby Dick. And I know a lot of people would probably kind of be like, oh, that's not kaiju, he's just a sperm whale. It is pretty much talked about that Moby Dick was a larger than usual sperm whale. And I do like Moby Dick, and I do like the story that it's based, you know, the true stories that it's, that inspired it and all of that kind of stuff. And so one day I might very well do an episode on Moby Dick and talk about my love of it, how I feel about the book, how I feel about different adaptations of it, be it the Gregory Peck film or the, I believe it was a 3-part miniseries with Patrick Stewart as Captain Ahab. They did a 2-part miniseries. Back in 2010, I believe there's a very cheesy, like more kaiju version of Moby Dick. It's called Moby Dick 2010 because it was made in 2010. Like, yeah, that's literally the thought that they went into titling that film. But Moby Dick is a massive sea monster as opposed to a whale, and the Pequod or Pequod, however you feel like pronouncing it, the ship that takes place on, like with Moby Dick and all of that kind of stuff, it's been replaced by a submarine. It takes place in the year 2010, obviously. And yeah, it's done by that studio that is called The Asylum, that does a lot of ripoff movies that I've talked about before and all of that kind of stuff. Like right whenever Godzilla vs. Kong came out, they came out with one called Ape vs. Monster, which you guys have heard me talk about Ape vs. Monster. And like when Transformers came out, they did Transmorphers. And when Terminator, like, you know, one of the newer Terminator films came out, they did one called The Terminators. Like, you know, they do a lot of ripoff stuff. But they did one that was just inspired by Moby Dick. And I enjoyed it pretty good and all of that. But in a very, believe me, very much in a cheesy, this is a bad movie kind of way. But, you know, it is what it is. So, all right, guys, I think I've rambled on long enough. Time to actually get into talking about the Sea Beast. Now, the reason I brought up Moby Dick the way that I did is because I will tell anyone that I describe this film as a combination of Moby Dick meets How to Train Your Dragon. Because there's a lot of similarities that I see in both properties. Now, in no way am I saying that I feel this film was a ripoff of either property, but I do believe, and in the interviews and stuff that I read, like the director, Chris Williams, never actually mentioned Moby Dick or How to Train Your Dragon as inspiration for the film. But if you watch it and you're familiar with at least the original How to Train Your Dragon and the story of Moby Dick, you cannot help but make the comparison between the two. Like, there's a lot of similarities. Like, as far as some of the characters and all of that go, obviously the main character, or one of the main characters of the film, is Jacob, who is voiced by Carl Urban. And he is accompanied by a very strong-willed little girl named Maisie. And she was one of the highlights of this film. Like, I enjoy, like, she had a mouth on her. Like, she would put Jacob in his place real quick. Like, whenever he was, they're talking in the bar, and she said that she wanted to join the crew of the Inevitable, which is the ship that, the hunters are on, hunting the sea monsters and all of that. And he was basically like, no. And she's like, well, are you the captain? He's like, I'm going to be the captain someday. And she's like, well, I'd like to talk to the captain now, not captain someday. And so she starts referring to him as captain someday. And I just thought that was hilarious. And the film is just full of little smart-aleck comments from her like that. And yeah, it's pretty entertaining. But as far as some of the similarities between this and Moby Dick, the captain of the Inevitable is the character's name is Captain Crow, and he's played by or voiced by Jared Harris. Now, for those of you that don't know who Jared Harris is, he played the older Will Smith in the 90s live action adaptation of Lost in Space. He played, I can't think of the character's name, in Chernobyl. He was the one that wore glasses and all of that kind of stuff. He was the really, really smart guy that was working with the Russian military commander and all of that kind of stuff to try and figure out, like, what was going on with Chernobyl. He played in the second Sherlock Holmes film with Robert Downey Jr. Like, you know, he's been in a number of things. And he's a very good actor. I'm a big fan of Jared Harris. And he plays the captain of the Inevitable, Captain Crow. And that's one of the biggest similarities between this and Moby Dick, in that the sea beast, the main monster that the film is titled after, is called the Red Bluster, and or just Red for short. And he is seeking revenge against Red for past grievances. Like, I've watched the film like 3 or 4 times. I've never really picked up exactly like why he's going after Red, but I would imagine it had something to do with like Red destroyed, you know, one of his ships, or he does have an eye patch, and he did say something about Red took my, I can't remember the terminology that he used, but maybe Red is responsible for him losing an eye, which would put another similarity to which Moby Dick is the reason that Captain Ahab only has one leg and therefore needs to use a peg leg. So that's one thing. And then just Red being this offset color as opposed to some of the other animals. Now, a lot of the other animals are very brightly colored, and I'm going to get into that later on in the episode. But Red is a very standout, bright red color. And she is referred to numerous times as like the Red Demon or the Red Devil and all of that kind of stuff. It's things that Moby Dick was referred to as, the White Demon or the Demon of the Deep or the Devil of the Deep and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, there's definitely some similarities there. And as far as the comparisons to How to Train Your Dragon, it's that basically, you know, humans are at war with the sea beasts in the same way that humans were at war with the dragons in How to Train Your Dragon, when at the end of the day, it was all due to really a misunderstanding and people just wanting to not take the time to get to know the dragons and all of that kind of stuff. And whenever they did, they eventually ended up taming them as pets and they were able to coexist. And I have not seen a single frame of anything of How to Train Your Dragon past the first film. All I've seen is the first film. It was just one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm good. Like, you know, I don't need to see any more. Like, I like How to Train Your Dragon. I thought it was a very good film, but I was like, yeah, I don't need a franchise. You know, maybe one day I'll actually get to where I watch more of them, but as of right now, I'd always just been like, I'm good just watching the first one, and I'm okay. So, all right, guys, let's talk about the film a little bit, like some behind-the-scenes stuff and all of that. So it was directed by an individual by the name of Chris Williams, and if you don't know his name, he's actually been involved with a lot of different, like, well-known films and things like that. He was the co-director of Big Hero 6. He was the co-director of Moana and all of that kind of stuff. Like, he's been around for a little while. And his passion for these types of movies go all the way back to whenever he was younger, whenever he was a kid and all of that kind of stuff. And in an interview that he did with IndieWire, I got some answers as to some of the films and everything that inspired him to eventually want to do a film like this. He openly, like, he mentioned by name that he was a big fan of the 70s King Kong, and that he was also a big fan of the stop motion films of Ray Harryhausen, which, you know, I applaud anybody that grew up watching Ray Harryhausen films and all of that kind of stuff, because that's just some grade A stuff. He was also a big fan of, like, Disney's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and he pretty much said that he liked adventure films where people would go off into the unknown. Like, that's just what he liked. And so this ended up eventually becoming like a dream project for him. But it would take a long, long while for him to actually get to it for him to make it, obviously. He worked for Disney and all of that kind of stuff, but he never pitched it to Disney because he felt that Disney was just not the right place to be able to make this movie. It was one of those times where he was, you know, the director, writer of the film. He absolutely had a story in mind, a vision in mind. It's a little bit more adult. There's a little bit more bad language. There is some comedy in it, but comedy does not drive the movie. And he also, and that's part of the reason why he kind of didn't want to pitch it to Disney, because he really felt that Disney would be like, let's immediately kiddify this movie and lead with the comedy, make it over the top hilarious and all of that kind of stuff. And he was basically like, I want funny, but I don't want it to be the driving factor of the film. And so he didn't, he just never pitched it to Disney. And I'm very glad that he didn't, because if he did, yeah, we would have ended up with a movie more like Moana, which, that's not me bad-mouthing Moana. I think Moana is a good movie, but a lot of times whenever I think about Moana, one of the first things that pops into my mind was, or is, sure is funny. You know, I mean, it's a good comedy. And I'm just like, I'm glad that he went with Netflix so that he could make a more serious film, have some of the better cinematography to make things a little bit creepy and all of that kind of stuff. Like, whenever we was watching it, the oldest niece, the scene where Jacob and Maisie fall into the water and Jacob is like kind of swimming up to try and get her and all of that. And she points back, and whenever he turns around, and Red is just like hovering there, staring at them, and the water is murky and black and all of that kind of stuff. And then it shows like an aerial shot, and Red just very slowly like sleeks back into the dark. And the oldest niece turned and looked at me and went, "That was creepy." And I said, "Yeah, it kind of was." You know, not gonna lie. But I don't think imagery like that would fly at Disney, because Disney is very much, you know, wants everything to be 100% child friendly with their animated films and all of that kind of stuff. They don't want to put like creepy imagery and things like that in there. And so I just don't think an image like that would have flown very well with Disney. But, you know, here we are. So I'm very glad that he went with Netflix. Now, one of the other things that really, like, heavily inspired this film was old-style sea maps. And whenever I mean by old-style sea maps, we've all seen them. Like, even to the point to where, like, if, you know, in your history textbook from school, and you're looking, and it shows, like, a picture of a map of some of, like, the original maps and things like that, that explorers like Columbus and all of that would use. You know, you see this map, they're very, very detailed and all of that kind of stuff. And to show like the dangers that could be out there, like out in the water, there'll be a picture of like a sea serpent or like a giant fish or something like that. And he became very fascinated with those old style maps. And I'm not gonna lie, I love those old maps. I've got a few of them saved on my phone, and it has nothing to do with this movie. Like, I've had those maps saved on my phone for a while, because I do very much enjoy like fictional, like fantasy maps. Like, I'm eyeballing a poster of Middle Earth from Lord of the Rings, to get shows like, you know, Mordor and the Shire, Gondor, Rohan, and all that kind of stuff. Looking at getting a map of that. Like, I'm a big fan of that kind of stuff. So I can absolutely relate to him with being inspired by the old school maps and all of that. One of the main reasons that he went to Netflix to make this movie was because also at Disney, and I'm not bad-mouthing Disney, and he didn't bad-mouth Disney at all. He openly stated that he had a wonderful time working there, and he still keeps up with a lot of his old co-workers and all of that kind of stuff. But Disney is very much not a one person is over anything. Like, there's a lot of people, like, a lot of co-directors. I've already mentioned he was a co-director for Big Hero 6, as well as Moana, and all of that kind of stuff. And he wanted to have more creative control, as well as be the sole director of the movie. Which is a lot of the reason why a lot of, like, Netflix original films are getting made now. I'll use Zack Snyder as an example. We all know, like, with Zack Snyder, the BS that went down between him and Warner Brothers with the whole Superman, DC, and all that kind of stuff. Whether you're a fan of his style of movie making or not, or whatever, it was pretty sorry the way that Warner Brothers treated him. They brought him on board to do a series of films. It was going to be a five film series. And, like, he did Man of Steel. Then he immediately wanted to do Man of Steel 2 and introduce Metallo as the villain. Well, Warner Brothers got the big eyes. They wanted to try and catch up to the MCU. And so they said, no, we need to turn this into a spectacle. We need this to be a big thing. We want you to introduce Batman, Wonder Woman, and Doomsday in the next movie. So he shifted gears, came up with Batman vs. Superman. And even after he came up with Batman vs. Superman, there was still, like, they constantly was tweaking things. Well, we want you to take this out, and we want you to add this, and all of that kind of stuff. By the time Justice League rolled around, and the horrible incident happened with his daughter committing suicide, and he had to step away, they bring in Joss Whedon. He makes his butchered down version of this movie. And then eventually the Snyder Cut ended up getting, greenlit and all of that. And we finally got to see the Snyder Cut, which is a fantastic movie. It's night and day compared to what the Warner Brothers version of Justice League, like what we ended up getting. And they didn't just do it to Zack Snyder. Like, they did it to Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman. They wanted to cut the no man's land scene from Wonder Woman, where she, like, comes out, like, you know, from the trench, and she's, like, charging towards the Germans, and they're shooting, and she's deflecting the bullets. They wanted to cut that scene. Like, just constantly digging their hands into everything. And so now, Zack Snyder pretty much works with Netflix. He came out with Army of the Dead, which was a fantastic movie. He produced another film, Army of Thieves, that is a prequel to Army of the Dead. He is currently working on a film called Rebel Moon, which, for those of you that do not know, this was a Star Wars story that he pitched to be made into a Star Wars film years ago that got shot down. Well, now that he's working with Netflix, he's retitled it and retweaked it as Rebel Moon so that he can have his vision, like, come to life pretty much. But that's why he went to Netflix, because Netflix flat out told him, we do not interfere with our creators. We're not very hands-on. We are not, well, we want you to add this or we want you to add that. Like, you come here so that you can make the movie you want to make. And so that's why Zack Snyder is with Netflix now, because he gets to basically be unhinged and make the movies that he wants to make. And if you're a diehard Zack Snyder fan like I am, you're all for that. If you're not a big Zack Snyder fan, like I know a lot of people are, like, you know, it is what it is. Which, if you're not a Zack Snyder fan, you know, hey, again, it is what it is. Art is subjective, and I understand he has a very unique and particular filmmaking style, and it's not going to be for everybody. I am a diehard Zack Snyder fan. My older brother, which today is my brother's birthday, by the way, so, you know, tell him happy birthday. He turned 37 today, and he can't stand Zack Snyder. Like, he doesn't like his movies or anything. He liked Dawn of the Dead because he's a big zombie fan. I don't think he ever really watched Army of the Dead, but nonetheless, that's part of the reason why Chris Williams wanted to come to Netflix, was because he knew Disney would tie his hands, and he's like, I have a vision, I want to make this movie a certain way. Netflix is the avenue that will let me do what I want to do. And he had full creative control of this movie. And it turned out very, very well. Like, I'm very glad that he went with Netflix as opposed to Disney. Now, as far as, like, actually making the movie goes, believe it or not, you're going to believe one, you're not going to believe the second one. There were two big, big challenges for making this movie. One was the water. Because the sheer amount of water, he wanted the movie to be as realistic as possible. Whereas, think about Moana. When anytime they're on the raft or something like that, they're not moving a whole lot, like bobbing up and down or anything like that. Like, they're kind of just like coasting, like streamlining. And sometimes, you know, I worked offshore, I've worked out in the Gulf of Mexico, and sometimes water would be calm enough to where it would be a very smooth ride. 98% of the time, you're bobbing up and down because of the water and all of that. That's not really present a whole lot in Moana. And he wanted this movie to be realistic in the fact, like, I'm watching the scene right now. They just brought Red to the palace. And even sitting out there on this very calm, still water, you can see the actors and the ship is moving a little bit and all of that. Like, he wanted it to be realistic. He's like, the ship is going to move. The characters are going to react to that movement. Like, a lot of the different things on the ship are going to move in reaction to that as well. And so it was very, very challenging for him to, not really him, because he wasn't one of the animators, but it was very challenging for the animators to really work this out and make it to where that could happen. Which, by the way, there are almost 800 frames that take place somewhere like on the water or by the water of this movie. And 719 of them take place on The Inevitable. And, like, so, like, there's going to be a lot of movement that was going on in reaction to the water and all of that stuff. Now, the other big challenge, because he wanted it to be realistic, which, believe it or not, was ropes. There are a lot of ropes on ships, especially these old-style sailing ships, and even newer-style sailing ships, like, lots and lots and lots of ropes. And he wanted, again, as the ship would move, he wanted the ropes to move as well. He didn't want them to just be stationary or anything. And so, and even now, like I said, there was a scene just a little while ago where The Inevitable is sitting in very still, calm water. But as the ship is still moving up and down just a little bit, if you look in the background, you can see every single rope shifting. Like, it's unreal the amount of detail that they put into this movie and all that. So, like, yeah, it's nuts to me that they were able to put that amount of detail into it. Let's talk about Red. The Red Bluster, the sea monster version of Moby Dick. Now, the design of Red is a combination between a seal and a walrus. Like, you know, like, she's able to move very freely through the water. She's able to move, like, on land and all of that kind of stuff. Like, she's a pretty versatile beast. And I'm a big fan of Red. I'm not going to lie. The moment I was watching this, I was like, I need a figure. I need something. I need something of Red. And some of the other sea monsters are pretty cool, don't get me wrong, but I need something of Red. And to my knowledge, for everything that I'm able to find that's out there, is the only thing that exists on Red is a plush that you can buy on Amazon. And I'm like, I don't really want a plush. I want it like a figure or like a toy or something like that. And it blows my mind that as popular as this movie was and as highly talked about, like, that critics talked about it and the fan reaction to it and all of that kind of stuff, it really is surprising to me that they didn't do like toy lines and stuff like that for this. Like, I think it would have worked out very, very well for Netflix if they would have done that. But whatever. So, the Red Bluster, otherwise known as Red. I already told you, combination of seal and walrus. Now, its face, if you see, Red is unique amongst pretty much all the other monsters that are in this film, in which they look reptilian, or they look like some other type of monster. Like, there's a crab that Red has a fight with, which I really enjoy the fight scene between Red and the crab. Pardon me. The very beginning, it's like a sea serpent-like thing, and it has very much kind of like a dragon look to it. Like, they look, you know, very much like monsters. But then you look at Red, and Red has a very other than whenever she's snarling and stuff like that, or roaring, she very much has like a very friendly-looking face. And the reason for that is because they designed her face to look more like a mammal. Because they wanted people to be on the side of Red. And they felt that if they made her face a little bit more friendly looking, people would be more inclined to feel for her and get emotionally attached to her and all of that kind of stuff, as opposed to if it just looked like, you know, a dragon or something like that. As far as her eyes go, if you looked at her eyes or anything like that, and you're like, man, she has really cool eyes, like, that looks kind of, like, I've seen those eyes before. She was specifically given cat eyes, so that's why her eyes look the way that they do. And as far as, like, the bright red color of her goes, the reason that they decided to go with red was because there's a 1992 film done by Studio Ghibli that was called Porco Rosso, and in it is a scene of a red airplane against a blue ocean. And Chris Williams flat out said that was the reason why I decided to go with the bluster being red, because he liked the way that it looked, the red against the blue, and all of that kind of stuff, and so that's why he decided to go with it. Now, as far as he openly stated he wanted this to be kind of like a pro-nature film, and one of the things that he decided to do was anything in nature is very, very brightly colored, whereas anything dealing with the humans is very dull in color. And for example, red is very, very bright red. Jacob wears a red sash around his waist, but it's a very distressed red. It's a very faded red, to where, like, you know, it doesn't stand out. And even the crab that Red fights, bright purple. Whenever they get to the island, all of the trees, bright, beautiful green leaves, like, you know, like the monster that they encounter on the beach, bright, bright yellow. The monster that they're battling at the very beginning, bright green. You know, that's just what they wanted to go with. Whereas if you look at any color scheme that an animal or that the island or something like that has, directly compare that to a color featured in the human world, be it clothing that they're wearing or hair color or something like that, there's a very distinct difference in brightness. The humans wear clothing that is very, very dull, and anything in nature was very, very bright. And Chris Williams openly stated that he wanted people to know that, like, basically, they were on the side of nature while watching or making this film. Now, as far as the future goes, Chris Williams has stated he never intended for this to be a franchise. This was going to just be a one-off film, has a beginning, has an end, and that's that. But since it was so well received, fans, including myself, are screaming for more. Not necessarily just a sequel, but even just spinoffs or a prequel. Like, how did the war between the humans and the sea creatures get started? Maisie openly talks about her parents served on a ship called the Monarch that was destroyed in battle against a sea monster. And, like, I would like to see that. And it doesn't even have to be in a movie. It could be an animated series. It could be in the forms of books, comic books, something like that. I want more of this series, and I would be all about it. And he has talked about how, at first, he wanted it just to be a standalone thing. But because so many fans are screaming that they actually want more, they want sequels, they want spinoffs, he said he does have ideas as to where it could go, and he did not elaborate on anything else other than saying that, and that was from an interview from August. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for the Sea Beast. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I'm sorry again that it took so long for me to actually put it out and all of that kind of stuff, but I finally got to it. I'm a big fan of this movie. If you haven't seen it yet, get on Netflix, go watch it. It's a fantastic movie. Your kids will like it. If you're more of the family-friendly type of thing, like, it does have a little bit of foul language in it, but not a lot. Not, like, bad stuff or anything like that. So, you know, take that as you will. And, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, please go watch it. And I think you guys would really, really enjoy it. So, this Wednesday, going to go ahead and let you guys know that it's going to be late, but I am doing a Halloween special episode. So this Wednesday, as opposed to doing the Kaiju Havoc of doing like updates and news and release info and all of that kind of stuff, because I haven't found anything really worth talking about this week so far, I'm going to go on ahead and do an episode on the Wolfman, the original Wolfman, the Universal Monster starring Lon Chaney Jr. And that's just going to be my Halloween special that I'm going to do. So, going to do that. And then I'm also just going to go ahead and let you guys know, next Saturday, I'm not really going to be talking about production of a movie or anything, but I'm doing that thing that I've talked about potentially doing more than once and all that. It was an idea that was given to me by one of my listeners by the name of Travis. And I'm going to get Kid Kong's daughter, her name is Amberly, and we're going to sit down, me, her, and Kid Kong, and we're going to talk about Godzilla versus Kong. Again, I'm not getting into like the production of it and all of that kind of stuff. We're just going to talk about it, like what her favorite parts was, what her favorite kaiju is, and you know, we're not just going to talk about that movie. Like, I'll talk about, like, you know, what was the first kaiju film your dad showed you and all that, because she is a big fan of kaiju, and she actually listens to the podcast. Like, you know, so she actually very much enjoys this genre. After I watched this movie, I actually told Kid Kong, you need to let Amberly watch The Sea Beast, and he let her watch it, and she very much enjoyed it and all of that kind of stuff. So he's raising her right. She likes monster movies. So, yeah, we're good in that avenue. So next Saturday, a week from today, will be me, Kid Kong, and his, I believe she's 8 years old, 8 or 9, daughter Amberly will be talking about Godzilla versus Kong, and then we'll also just talk about some other kaiju-related stuff and all of that. And this Wednesday, I'm going to be doing The Wolfman as a Halloween special episode. So, all right, guys. And just gonna go ahead and let you guys know, since not this coming Saturday, but the next Saturday, I'll probably throw you guys a bone and do a pretty popular movie, probably a Godzilla film or something like that, just because it's been a while since I've done a Godzilla one. And yeah, so gonna go ahead and do that, and I'll announce next week which Godzilla film I'll be doing. So, alrighty, guys, thank y'all once again. Thanks for the patience and all of that kind of stuff. I very much appreciate it. Thanks for all the love and support. Check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, a Godzilla / King Kong podcast. And on, I also have a Godzilla Ultimate fan page. And on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal the Kaiju Guy. Again, thank you all. This was the Sea Beast. I hope you enjoyed it. We will catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.